So now my part is to talk about the relativizing analysis of the operational context for the rest of the morning.
Sorry.
Thank you, Judy. Sally McFaig was a visiting professor during one of the years I was in divinity school. So. Occasionally, we get Soul Matters materials every month, and on the website you can look them up and go through them. But occasionally, those materials, as diverse and varied and interesting as they are, or at least as I think they are, they just don't seem to do it for folks. And that's the way it started at our Spirituality on Tap group a week ago, this last Thursday. Everybody in the group said, I'm really not excited about these materials. I couldn't connect with them. Well, that was just the opposite because for me. I was excited about them. I had come to the group thinking, we're going to have just this great discussion, and it's just going to jump from the very beginning. I thought it was one of the best themes we'd ever had. Embodiment, you know? Let's talk about embodiment. I mean, that's kind of bizarre, but that's sort of what we do in our heads, that we're always thinking, we're always moving, we're always doing, and then the question of being embodied in our bodies, what does that mean? How does that work? How does that, how is it lived out? And then they go on to ask the question, what does it mean to be a community of embodiment? So Kate said to me, okay, tell us what it means to you. You know, help us out here. And so that started me into just that spontaneous riff on embodiment, and went in several different directions before I finally hushed. But it started by my being is more than my thinking. It's just the obvious thing that we are embodied. We are creatures. As much as we like the ideas and the thinking that we've got it, and this, we're living here. We're not living here. This is what interacts with everything around us. We are embodied. We are creatures. Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh talks about we enter are. He actually has the order of interbeing. We enter are. And then I went off on what we eat. We were sitting at a meal and we weren't talking about being embodied. I was saying that I am very aware of that my body is made from what I put into it. We just are. And then I went off on why I eat organic and people make fun of that and comment on it and all of that, all of the above. But it's not just because it's good for me. It's because I don't want somebody else to put their body in a field where I wouldn't walk so that I can eat. That's so I can eat cheap food. That's embodied. It's not just an idea. The idea of, oh, this costs less. I'm going to do that. Then I went off on the body knows. It's the one thing that I say to people who near the end of life, people who've asked me, have you ever been with a person who's afraid to die? The body knows. The body gets us ready for that time. If we are older, if we are younger, the body fights it because it's not right. But the body knows. The body knows how to take care of grief if we'll give it the space and the time to sit and cry and be with the feelings. But how many of us go, I'm sad, I'm going to stay busy. I'm going to do things over and over again. I know a person who, after their beloved partner died, just stayed busy with volunteering and traveling and one thing right after the other, and never gave the body time to do its work. I'm dealing inside me with grief and sadness right now. And I know that in my head I'm fine, but I also watch how it affects how I move in the world. I know people in this room are moving from their home of years to new home and going, I've got this, I've got it scheduled, I've got it doing. But then inside, you know that something's going on. It's embodied. A person who's leaving and in the sadness has that in their body. So, but the body can handle that. What does it do with it? It transforms it into being a part of you. Then we talked about embodiment as soul and spirit. So soul being the being, sort of the embodiedness of everything, where spirit is the doing and thinking. And then riffed on what is our call? What is our calling? What is our doing that is not just a thought or action or a should, but a doing that arises from our being as part of who we are and how we are, that emerges out of ourselves. And then said something about embodiment as relational, being relational. And about at this point, somebody said, that helps, you know, with all of these things. And we had a great discussion. We went on to talk about dance and movement and the experience of being in contra dances and the dance, but then the other bodies. And we talked about worship, how this is not very embodied. You're sitting. I'm the only person moving up here at this moment. So we just went on with that sense. But move forward then from that Thursday to this Tuesday. And I went to a sanctuary working group in Asheville. And who that is, Bill Ramsey, has organized this sanctuary working group to look at what it means to be a sanctuary for immigrants or for people who are undocumented. What does it mean to be a place of sanctuary for them? And this was in Asheville at the Land of Sky, United Church of Christ on 70 up on Tunnel Road. There were 39 congregations represented in the room and 70 people there. It was this wonderful, clarifying, inspiring event. The presentation began, Bill Ramsey had it incredibly organized. It began with a lawyer, Nancy Teague, who is an immigration attorney. And she was really exploring the laws, what it meant, and the constitutional nature of them, of becoming a sanctuary as a place of residence for people. And you can see where your mind is going in that. And she was doing the details. She's very personable and made all that very accessible. But then Bill had moved the program where it wasn't just about forming sanctuary as this space of safety, but it was about also living it, living being sanctuary in your community. And there was a woman, Rebecca Sharp, who was the coordinator of Latina ministry at the Church of the Holy Spirit in Mars Hill, Madison County. And she gave a history of a group that she had of Latinas, women, and Anglo women. There were about 10 of each who had gotten together, and they'd done a needs assessment and looked at it, and they decided they just wanted to go to lunch together. And so they were going to lunch together every 2 weeks. And then as all this trouble has gone along and the questions with law enforcement and ICE and that kind of thing, they said, let's invite the law enforcement officers to dinner. So they did. They invited the sheriff of Madison County. They invited the chief of police of Mars Hill. And they invited the head of security at Mars Hill College to come. The sheriff brought 9 people from his department. The chief of police brought 3 or 4. And I don't know how many the head of security brought. But then Rebecca Sharp said, so they invited these guys to dinner, and it was all guys. And she said, she said, you know, it was a small kitchen, and we all ended up in the kitchen. And she said, they grow them big in Madison County. She said they all must have been over 6'2". But she actually, I thought about it later, they actually fed the feds. But where I'm going with this is, what did they do? They fed them. And every one of them said they want to come back. They want to schedule it again. They want to do this again. They have changed Madison County. And you go, well, not in a big way, and yada, yada, yada. But it's sort of like that movie, I think, is it Chocolat? Or like, yeah, Chocolat. It's kind of, they seduce these guys with food. But that's embodied. I mean, that's real. They ate together. They shared together. Then the congregations, just think about that for ourselves. Our own dreamer breakfast now is all white with Latino presenters. And think about the difference in that as a fundraiser and then as a community. Then the congregations presented in discernment how to participate with integrity, how to have meetings in the congregation to discover what our call is. And I realized what they were talking about was how to embody this work, not just think it, not just do it. And there was a woman, Keaton Hill, from Grace Presbyterian, who gave it language for me. All of a sudden, it gave the word. She says, our work needs to be, has to be, transformational, not just transactional. Transformational, not just transactional. So many of us are transactionally predisposed. We want to do something. We really want to do it. Transformational means you can't walk away the same. And what this congregation does, what they say we do, is they just said, we're going to have meetings to talk about this, to think about it, to see how we might do this with integrity. What does the congregation embody? Not just what will the congregation do and how will it be transformed. Transformational, that's a soul word, embodied. Transactional, that's spirit, action. And they have to be brought together. She talked about audacious hospitality, where she asked, are we truly trustworthy and ready not just to do, but are we ready to be changed? She said, are we helpful and not harmful with our good intent? Good intentions can cause great harm, she reminded us, when they are what? Disembodied. When they're just in the head as a good thought from me, the do-gooder, and in my white male body of privilege that knows what is right for everybody. Because I've lived it. She said, we must take the lead of the communities we're trying to help out. So then embody compassion in relationship. Not just do the community project. We have to live community. To be the beloved community, you have to live it. Be transformational, not merely transactional. Judy Long is sort of our Hendersonville, Rebecca Sharp, and Keaton Hill. And together we've been exploring how to be transformational in Hendersonville. And she titled this, Feed Our Neighbors, Feed Our Souls. I would say it's a community of embodiment. So we enter are so that Hendersonville enter will be. Judy.
You always give those introductions, Jim, that I can't live up to. Over half of the children in Henderson County qualify for free and reduced lunch. Over half. One third of all of our neighbors live in two-person households with income of less than $2,000 a month. And that's where the average rent is $700 to $800. So all other expenses come out of that other 1,000. 10%, 1 in 10 of our neighbors live on less than $1,000 a month. Poverty is real in Henderson County. It just is. We don't like to think so. It's hidden. We hide it behind and out of the way and down the dirt roads, but it's real. Food pantries, free meals, and backpacks of food enable our neighbors and their kids to find the sustenance they need and thus to live. And our contributions today will provide a hot, healthy Friday night meal and a backpack filled with food for the weekend for those over half of our children who receive their main sustenance at school. Our support today means these kids will not go hungry during the 60 hours a week they're not at school. Sit with that for a moment. Let that reality into your mind and into your spirit, and breathe it into your body. Breathe it in. The reality that but for the generosity of congregations all over our community, over half of our children would be hungry 2.5 days a week. Our contributions matter today. They matter a great deal. But I can't stop there. Because as people of faith, we cannot simply write a check and feel we have done enough. We are called to do and be more. Jesus said, "The poor will always be with you," but he did not toss a few coins in the collection plate and walk away. Buddha left his life of ease and privilege when he was confronted with suffering, and both entered into relationship. Both took the faithful, riskier, authentic path of walking with. Both embodied, as McFaig defined, seeing others with full attention, that is, loving them and acknowledging that these others were very real. As Jim noted, we can engage only in transactional behavior. We can write a life-saving check this morning and think we've done our part. We could. Or we could embody our faith and engage in that transformational behavior to enter into relationship, to risk changing and being changed by the experience, to be present, and to walk with. The Soul Matters Guide, as Jim said, asks this month what it means to be a community of embodiment. What it means to embody our lives and values and faith. Embody them, not just think about them, because we're real heady and we like to think, and not just believe them or espouse them, but live them. To embody sometimes means doing, but for me, it more often and more truly means being. As in being present to an experience, being in the moment, walking with and alongside another. We are human beings, but we most often act like we're human doings. And embodying is beingness. So embodying care for our hungry children goes beyond the transaction of writing the check, or even the transactional doingness of providing food. Embodying means moving into the beingness of transformational relationship, of authentic encounter, engagement, and walking with. Okay, that's all highfalutin talk. But what do I really mean? So I want to offer up one example, a personal one. Y'all are good at listening to my personal stories. You give me the microphone and you tell me to come back, so I keep talking. As background, I was a poor kid from a single-parent home. We received public assistance, wore hand-me-downs, and shopped at thrift stores of necessity. We drove borrowed clunkers and sold plants on the street corners for grocery money. And how much we ate depended on how many plants we sold. My brother and I would have qualified for free and reduced lunch. And I was smart, so I earned a scholarship to a private Catholic high school where I wore the same two skirts and navy blazer for 6 years. Poverty was my lived experience. And at my high school, we were required to do service hours in order to explore living our faith. This is a theme. The importance of the experience was not the work itself. Rather, it was the group exploration. We had to do hours and then come back and talk with our peers about what it meant to walk our faith, to put it into action, to live it. And that was this transformational moment for me that resonates with a lot of what I say up here. To not only walk my faith, but then reflect upon what it meant. To not espouse it, but embody it. So, spring break of my senior year found me in New Orleans on a mission trip. And one afternoon, we were assigned to work with the nuns at St. Thomas Project. It was a large and infamous housing project in New Orleans. And I was a human doer. I looked forward to doing something to help. I was anticipating making a difference. But instead, the nuns set our assignment for that afternoon to talk to Juanita. No doing, just being in authentic conversation. Now I was horrified and terribly disappointed. What did I have to learn from another poor kid? No one asked me about my experience. So I sat there on the porch, resplendent in my teenage attitude, sulking. Juanita arrived, and she was beautiful, mature, poised, cool, and very smart. I liked her immediately. She was only a year or two older than I was, but she was that kind of together that engendered teenage envy. Y'all know what I mean. I wished I was more like her, except that she had a two-year-old son. And she sat down and talked about her life to my peers. Remember, I'm sulking in the corner. But mostly, she talked about making a life an opportunity for her son. And in one of my prouder moments, I sulked through most of that conversation, arms crossed, removed from the discussion, refusing to engage. But finally, I couldn't take it any longer. And I joined the conversation to ask why. She was so smart and mature and driven and together. Why didn't she have dreams for herself? Why was it only about her son? I explained that I was a poor scholarship kid, but I was going to an excellent college in the fall. Why didn't she have dreams? And she looked at me with absolute tenderness and kindness, and what I can only describe still as pity. And very quietly and assuredly said that the difference was our color and her address. That in New Orleans, no one gave scholarships to black girls from St. Thomas Project, even if they were very smart. That conversation transformed my life. It set my course of study in college and the trajectory of my entire career. And everything I have done, learned, engaged, walked, been, is in response to that conversation with Juanita 30 years ago. Some people ask, what would Jesus do? I ask, what would Juanita say? And I dialogue with her still. See, in that moment, I went from resenting my lack of doing to being transformed. Because I eventually did engage despite my resentment at being forced into that moment. When we only write a check, when we only approach from our privilege to help the less fortunate, we miss the engagement. We miss the living of our faith. We miss the embodiment of life and faith and community that nurtures and transforms us and that does feed our souls. The Soul Matters Guide quotes Epictetus, and I just said that wrong, but a Roman philosopher. Don't explain your philosophy, embody it. And when we embody it, when we engage, when we walk with, transformation happens and grace happens. At my day job, at the clinics, we strive to embody walking with and to invite that grace that can come. And I spoke about those efforts at length in January, so I'm not going there. But I want to offer one example of that grace. Several of our most vulnerable, those most vulnerable patients asked us to give them the opportunity to explain, as in Jimmy's words, that poverty kills. That poor housing, lack of access to food, limited access to quality health care until they found us, and the amazingly high stress of attempting to navigate life kills. They asked to tell that to people who would listen and could make a difference. And the opportunity they sought presented itself in a community-wide policy discussion to set the 3-year priorities for health in Henderson County. Every county in the state is mandated every 3 years to set their priorities and to report those priorities and hold themselves accountable to the state and to the feds to do something about them. So our community-wide meeting was coming. And we brought 5 patients. We brought 5 patients who asked for that opportunity, and we put them at table discussions with policymakers and hospital CEOs. And grace happened. And our community was transformed in those 3 hours because when it came to vote with our sticky dots, for the first time ever, a social factor was added to Henderson County's health assessment. And by committing to safe and affordable housing, our community must hold ourselves accountable to addressing that problem. Grace. The clinics walked with some patients to nurture and empower their health and sense of self. And as part of their growing self-efficacy, those patients sought opportunities to tell decision makers that poverty kills. And now our entire community has committed and is accountable to the state and federal governments to address the issue of safe and affordable housing. Walking with and embodying changes us, changes our community in deep and profound ways. As people of faith, yes, we are asked to give generously to ensure that our kids do not go hungry. But more significantly, as people of faith, we are called to embody, to walk with, to engage in authentic relations, to be fully present to and with those we deem worthy of our charity and care. Our first Unitarian Universalist principle calls us to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And that does not just mean that every person is worthy of eating. It means every person is worthy of respect, worthy of notice, worthy of engagement and presence and authentic relationship. That calls us to be with one another, not to do for them. It calls us outside of our privilege to embody engagement and community and compassion and love. And then we feed our souls as well as our children. Then we invite transformational grace into our lives and community to create new paths, new opportunities, new energy to build the embodied, compassionate, just, and beloved community that we dream. And we have a unique opportunity to create just such a community here in Henderson County. This is a special place. I have never, and I've worked in about 20 different places, I've never experienced such an engaged place. People move here because it is nirvana and because we engage. The number of stories from my board and my volunteers about people who moved somewhere else in their retirement first and left because they were disenchanted with the golf culture and they wanted to be a part of a community. The number of stories of people who moved here and upon meeting their neighbors with that basket of welcoming blueberry muffins, the first question is, what are you into? And let me tell you where to volunteer. If any community can learn to walk with and transform ourselves, it is us. It is this unique, blessed place. We are human beings. And truthfully, we are doers. So as you step out, I invite you to seek those opportunities to do with presence, with engagement, to walk with, so that we may truly, in the words of the Dalai Lama, embody the transcendent. So may it be, this day and all days.